This is Adam Gorney with the Respect My Decision podcast. This week's special guest, Chad Johnson, the coach at Mission Viejo California High School. A lot of guys on the team, Chad. You have your quarterback. Your top two wide receivers are pretty good guys. You have a kid committed to Alabama at corner. The first question is, Chad, undefeated season coming? Is that the expectation now?
I mean, you know, since we've been here now for 7 years, I mean, the COVID season, probably omit that. So it's only a couple of games in the spring. So 6 full seasons. I mean, that's been the expectation every season, you know. And, you know, for the most part, we know we've lived up to close to it. I mean, we went 9-1 our first year, 10-0 and those things. So, yeah, last year we had a really young team and we didn't we went 7-3 and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that's the expectation. We always try to schedule very competitive games. That we feel like we have a chance to win, right? You know, we try to schedule teams that we think is going to be a four quarter battle. And I think the schedule this year represents that. And I think every single week we're playing a team that if we don't play well, we'll beat us. And if we play well, we'll have a chance to compete and win. So, you know, that's kind of what you want to do, I think. And I'm excited about the season that way.
7 years is hard to believe. I mean, I sort of look the same. You look much older 7 years later, but
for sure.
No, we actually both look terrible. let's talk about some of your guys though, individually. I mean, there's a lot of interest in there. There's a lot of talent on the team top to bottom. And let's start with DJ Lee. I mean, what kind of talent is he? He has physical gifts that are just super rare. And honestly, we rank him as the third best cornerback in the country. 1, 2, and 3 could almost flip because they're basically the same person, like this 6'3 long cornerback that you just fall in love with.
Yeah, he's extremely talented, and we're going to use him on both sides of the ball this year. He had a great summer as a receiver as well as the DB. So, you know, we're very excited about him. As you said, you know, his length is definitely his strongest attribute, you know, being 6'3 and change. He's also very fast and very twitchy and athletic. You know, I always tell a story like, last year or maybe the year before that, our track coach in the middle of a track meet was like, "Hey, we need some points needing a triple jump." And he's like, "I don't know. I've never done it before." And he goes out there. He's like, "Well, give it a try." Goes out there and sets like the state leading mark. Yeah. And never been practiced. So, you know, you always hear stories of athletes like that and in freak shows and DJ's definitely one of them. He's also freaky strong in the weight room. He squats well over 400 pounds. Very good power cleaner. He's just a freak, man. And so we're really excited about him. And yeah, I mean, Alabama's getting a really good one.
Which is surprising that he's so strong in the weight room. Cause he's not like jacked up. He's not like some thick kid. He's just like this long lean kid, but he could be strong. Walk me through the end of his recruitment. It seems like it came down to Alabama, Georgia. What were those conversations like? And knowing Dante was there, knowing T-Rob was at Georgia, for him to go to Alabama with a new staff, how big was that?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to his recruitment of Washington by Washington staff to now Alabama, right? Yeah. Back when they were at Washington, they were in the championship series there in the Final Four, if you will. You know, DJ was very, very interested in Washington. I think it was probably his highest, you know, school on his board, if you will. Yeah. And then they get the job at Alabama, right? So that kind of all shuffled up. What coaches were going to go? What coaches weren't going to go? The DB coach that I think he was looking to, you know, go to Washington for ended up not going to Alabama, right? I think, you know, that they didn't bring their defensive coordinators with them, the defensive staff, and some went to Tennessee and blah, blah, blah. So I think, you know, that kind of allowed other schools to kind of get in the mix. At the end of the day, he ended up, you know, going back to where he first fell in love, which was Coach DeBoer, and it was not Alabama, you know?
Yeah. There's sort of a maxim, and agree with it or disagree with it. Like, you put your best player, your most athletic players on defense. Do you think that's fair to say, especially coming from you, who's an offensive minded guy, calls, you know, does all that kind of stuff. Is it, there's a kid in Florida named DJ Pickett, who's actually even longer than Dijon. And it's like, how do you not just put him at receiver and just throw the ball to him? Is it hard to just not wear him out throughout a whole season and just kind of put him at corner?
Yeah. You know, I think that's something we have to be cognizant of. You know, he's definitely a corner first, you know, and a receiver second. So, you know, we'll make sure his reps at receiver aren't going to be, you know, 60 plays at corner, another 60 plays at receiver. You know, we definitely want to get him in though. You know, he's an explosive player. He's phenomenal with the ball in his hands. He'll be our starting kickoff returner as well. Him and Vance will, which I don't, you know, yeah. You're a kickoff guy, unless you guys putting it 10 yards deep. I don't know why you want to keep to them, but no, those guys are explosive, the ball in their hands, and DJ is extremely long. It actually does a great job going up and high pointing. I don't know. I know people have said that about putting your best athletes on defense. I don't know if they're saying, you know, that maybe they don't have the IQ to play offense, so just throw them out there on defense. I don't know what the basis of that is, but you know, I know this this is my 24th year doing this. You know, if you don't have receivers that have speed that can take the top off, you know, it can get problematic. You know, it can get really problematic. So, you know, that's why, you know, with Phillip and DJ and Vance offensively, they can really take the top off. You know, it definitely scares defenses to come up and trying to play that, you know, kind of, lack of a better word, the FU man. You know, like, they're just going to play FU man and try to crowd the box, take your run game. And if we don't have guys who can stretch it, you know, get open and create separation, it can be problematic. You know, Modern Day's done that for, we'll see what they do this year, but Modern Day's done that for a long time. Yeah. You know, go out and get really good DBs, play FU man and say, good luck.
Yeah.
You know,
push it to the sideline and you're not going to do anything about it. Yeah.
And that pass rush is really good too. You know, so it's just, this year, you know, I think that's the reason why we had such good success in the summertime with our passing leagues schedule and, you know, beating everyone at our tournament, beating everyone at the Ezra tournament, is because, you know, of guys like DJ and our ability to you know, play man when we wanted to, play zone when we wanted to, and then offensively stretch the field vertically. You know,
I want your opinion on something else, especially out here in California, where it probably started, but now it's nationwide. We, in our business, we take summer football like very seriously when it comes to evaluations. Like, and yeah, I get it. the lights have dimmed.
Yeah, there we go.
We like, we care about camp football and we care about 7-on-7. And yeah, we're also very cognizant that, like, the focus that comes into a Friday night football game is far greater than kids kind of showing up rolling out of bed and coming to a 7-on-7 and stuff. But I've used this line before. Like, I've never seen a player be bad in be good in 7-on-7 and just be horrible on Friday nights. You know, like, it does translate. Like, do you kind of feel the same way, or is it like a totally different sort of evaluation process?
I think for like receivers and DBs and linebackers and all of those things, I think you're completely accurate. Yeah. That if you're great on 7-on-7, you're going to be great on Friday night. The quarterback position, I think, is a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you have these guys in 7-on-7 that are like 5'4", you know what I mean? And they're running around and doing sprint outs and they throw the ball like at the line of scrimmage. It's like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like they snap the ball and they throw the ball at the tee.
Right.
There's no drop. Right. You know, they're a little guy, you know, so it's like for the quarterback play, I think that's the one position that's different.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, no, that's not real football for them.
Yeah.
You know, is it like, you know, being in a flight simulator and getting practice, you know? Yeah. But you know, being in a flight simulator isn't the same thing as actually someone actually shooting at you.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so, you know, I think, you know, that's the biggest thing where I don't mind it for quarterback development. I think it works and it doesn't, you know, a lot of good things for them, but, you know, in real football with guys actually trying to hit you in and all those things, I think it's different for them. It doesn't always translate for the quarterbacks. You might have a guy that's 7-on-7 that's unbelievable at quarterback. And then in a real game, he doesn't do much because of the things we talked about, where a guy that maybe is 7-on-7 is really not his thing, but maybe he's more athletic or something like that. And you get him on a real game and he can really be explosive and move around and do some things to put defenses in a bind, and he can be a really good player. So, that's my opinion on that.
I think that's a great point. And yes, you are totally right. Like, how many quarterbacks have we seen just dial it up at 7-on-7 and then the pass rush comes, or they can't read a defense, or the defense changes at the last second, they can't read it, or, you know, they crap their pants once somebody gets through the line, or they can't throw on the run, or all those kinds of things. Very, very good point. Let's talk about another one of your guys in 25, Phillip Bell. Very difficult summer for him. For those who don't know, his mother passed away this summer. How has the team sort of rallied around him and embraced him? And then secondarily, USC, Ohio State seem to be battling it out for him.
Yeah, you know, it was a tough day, man. You know, I got a call from my receiver coach, who kind of let me know that something had happened. And then I got the phone with Phillip, and, you know, it was tough, man. It was very tough. And I really feel for that young man. You know, it's obviously way too soon to young as well as to lose your mom. And,
yeah.
And, you know, and we've been, you know, supporting him and, you know, let him take the time it took to you know, go through that process and mourn. And, you know, he was gone for a couple of weeks and he's, you know, come back. I think it's very good that he's back and on the, you know, back with the team and practicing and, you know, playing his first game on Saturday in Hawaii. And the reason for that is because I think it gives him like a release, like, you know, you can kind of get away from it for a couple of minutes. You know, while we're in practice or the game, you know, where he's not going to be thinking about it and, you know, and obviously be, you know, emotional about it. So, yeah, it's we definitely have something more to play for now. You know, we're a big family. So when kind of something happens to one of us, we kind of take it, you know, like it happened to all of us. So, you know, Phillip's a wonderful kid, great young man. And it's definitely a disappointing deal that occurred.
25 is a great class. 26 is loaded as well. You've been doing a great job developing these guys. And one of the guys, let's start at receiver, Vance Spafford, who we're moving drastically up in our rankings. And there are two types of receivers, I think. Guys who could be are good high school receivers. Like they'll catch, like he had over 100 catches, I think, last year. He's a good high school receiver, but that sometimes doesn't translate to college in the NFL. I definitely think he has college and definitely NFL potential in that he isn't going to blow you away physically, but he gets open against everybody. And then he has surprising speed. I mean, he put up some big numbers this summer where he's just like, I don't know how to say this other than like he outsmarts everybody and finds holes everywhere.
Yeah, he's a really smart kid. And he's actually very strong too. You know, I mean, last year, he came into his sophomore season power clean like 270, 275, something like that. So he's an extremely explosive, strong young man, extremely smart. And he really wants to be great. Like he is a route technician. You know, this summer he had a chance to go and work with Amon-Ra St. Brown a little bit. And, you know, he came back and we were talking about things that he learned and just really trying to be a student of the game and try to maximize his potential. I think when you go from high school to college, you kind of almost have to fit into like a box sort of and Vance has that. Like sometimes like if you go to college and the guy was labeled as an athlete, like how many of those athletes end up working out?
Right. Right.
They don't, you know what I mean? What can Vance do? Well, Vance is always going to be able to go vertical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because his speed is elite. I mean, he ran 10.6 as a sophomore in track.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that equates to, you know, he'll be gone in college by then. But just imagine if he's, you know, runs track again his junior year this year and then track again his senior year and didn't go to college early. I mean, that's 10 – that this year is probably a 10.4. And then his senior year, it's probably a 10.3, 10.2.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that now you're talking like elite speed. So – you know, and I think, you know, that's going to be what colleges want and what NFL guys want. You got to be fast. You know, how many times have we seen in the NFL draft, a guy goes out there on his combine and runs, you know, 4.3 like John Ross, right?
First
all
rounder,
of a sudden his draft stock, draft stock jumps up and, you know, John Ross is not big, you know, you know, and so I had a chance to actually coach him in an all-star game. You know, he's unbelievably fast. So, you know, I think that's what Vance brings. And then he also does a lot of other things. Like he's great with the ball in his hands. He's our punt returner. He's our kickoff returner. He'll get you a lot of yak yards. You know, sometimes guys are just like straight line fast and they catch the ball unless they're running a straight line. They have no ability like to go laterally or make a move. Yeah. And that's not him. Like you watch what he does with the ball in his hands, you know, on punt returns and all kinds of things. And even like tunnel screens, you know, we get him the ball a bunch of different ways. And he's just really good at making people miss and creating yak.
I think that is super important too. Like he had a great, you know, sophomore season. He could have sat back this summer and been like, I'm in Mission Viejo. I'm going surfing. I'm hanging out with the girls. And instead he's with Amon-Ra, like maybe the biggest dog receiver in Southern California history, like just total no nonsense, always killed it. And I love that mentality. I mean, honestly, in terms of like what we do, that's sometimes more important, that a kid has that killer instinct instead of just sitting back and doing nothing, you know?
No, I totally agree. And you know, to advance his credit, like, hey, when he came back, I was like, what was the one thing that stuck out to you? It was like, Amon-Ra is so good with his hands.
Yeah.
Like, he's so good with his hands and hand fighting off the line of scrimmage versus press. Yeah. Like, no one can touch him because his hands are so good. And I'm guessing that Amon-Ra trains with martial arts people that knows how to, like, you know, block, you know, punches and guys trying to jam. And he's very good with his hands, almost like a defensive end would do, right? When a tackle trying to set on him. That was the one thing that Vance, you know, was constantly talking about, is how good Amon-Ra was at the line scrimmage versus press with his hands, you know. And he was like, I got a long way to go, you know, to get to even with his hands, like just that one part of being a receiver. And I was like, yeah, I go, the crazy part, Vance, is, you know, if you're going to the NFL, you only got a couple years to fix it before you're going.
Right.
You know, I go, so you don't have a lot of time. Like, you got to think, you know, it's kind of my big talk when I talk to these athletes who, you know, become the best player on our team and then they become, you know, the best player around, is like, okay, well, now you're competing against not only the best people in the United States for those few picks that might be in the NFL draft, but you're also fighting against all the guys in the NFL, and they don't want to go, they don't get cut.
Right.
You know, they want that second contract, third contract. So I go, you know, now you're comparing yourself to everyone, and the intensity of your work ethic has to match that. And you don't have a lot of time to catch up, you know, because in a very short time, those NFL DBs you watch on Sunday, you're going to have to go against them, or else you're going to get embarrassed at camp, at mini camp, at some NFL team. Right. And then your career is going to be not for long, which is what the NFL stands for.
And I think too, Chad, you don't have to speak to this because you have a job, but like, parents need to hear that. Like, good high school football player does not translate to guaranteed NFL success. Like, right. The level of professionalism that these guys have is just so insane. It's just, when you see them all doing it on Sunday, you can't really appreciate, one, what they've gone through to get there, and two, just the technicians that they are at every little single thing they do, plus just the physical and athletic attributes that go into it. Let's close it out with your quarterback, who you definitely seem to trust, like a growing trust, and now can kind of do everything, in Luke Fahey, who's also recruitment kind of really has taken off. And I think you said this to me last year, like, the more that people see him, the more people will just absolutely fall in love with him. What makes him so special, and where do you kind of see him projecting out?
I mean, it's funny because, you know, we were able to bring back Rob Johnson on the staff. You know, Rob, obviously NFL quarterback, played USC, Keyshawn Johnson's quarterback, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, now he's around. And so, you know, I've never played in the NFL. I've had guys that have gone to the NFL, like Josh Rosen. And I remember coaching them and seeing what their arm talent was.
Yeah.
But I've never been in the NFL, all the places Rob was, and you know, pregame, all the experience he has, it's way above my head. And I'll ask him questions like, where does his arm talent compare to, like, all the guys that you've been around? He's like, it's up there. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, I don't know. I remember one day Rob said, I don't know what Patrick Mahomes looked like in high school as far as arm talent is concerned.
Man.
But I can't imagine it was better than that. Like, right. Some of the throws he's making right now.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't. But Patrick Mahomes as a high schooler was not great. I'm honestly telling you.
Yeah, well, so that's probably a bad comparison. Yeah, right. Man. But, you know, but I just, you know, I've had two number one quarterbacks in the country. Right. While I was at Bosco, I had Josh Rosen followed up by DJ. They're both number one quarterbacks in the country based on, you know, whatever thing you're listening to.
Yep.
I don't know what you guys had him at, but and his arm talent is equal to those two, you know, and I would even argue that Luke can make better off platform throws than those two could make as a going into junior season in high school.
Yeah.
As a junior in high school, comparing Josh Rosen's arm talent with DJ's arm talent to Luke's arm talent, you know, I would say it's equal to their arm talent, and Luke can make more off-platform throws. I mean, he made a throw the other day where, you know, we were going a lot of best versus best right now in fall camp, and so we're going to start in defense, and Jaden Williams, our stud DN, is, you know, rushing off the – and he's moving to his left, and throws the ball, I don't even know, 60 yards, moving to his left like a fadeaway jumper. And we, Rob and I both look at each other. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, and he does that like three times a day. Like Rob Johnson and I look at each other and go like, holy cow, did you see that one?
Yeah.
He's special, man. And you know what the best part about him is too? Because we always hear these nightmare stories about quarterbacks, dads, sure, and parents, right? His dad and mom are the best people ever. Yeah. Like, he's so grounded. When the dad comes and talks to me, all he asks is, my son being respectful, is he listening to coaching? Has he ever talked back to you? And of course, those answers are all like, yes, he's listening to coaching. No, he's never talked back. He's an amazing kid.
Yeah.
But it's just, and that's why I think the guy's going to be really good, is because he doesn't have, you know, crazies at home that are going to end up hurting him because he's been parented correctly. You know, that's the other thing that I see so many times. These kids, they have so much talent, but because they've been parented incorrectly, that they always peter out. They never live up to their potential.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like your ranking should be like a five-star kid with a five-star parent, you know?
Yeah, and Chad, honestly, it has turned into like that level of trying to understand the kid. Like, and I'll throw out some names, okay? Malik Henry, very difficult to deal with, has turned into nothing. Bryce Young, great family, great kid, number one pick. You know, you put them both on a field, both insanely talented football players. But there's a lot more that goes into this than just being a really good football player, because it's like, yeah, anybody could throw a football. You know what I mean? And so like that has come into like what we do for a living is like, what do his coaches say about him? Who are his friends on the team? Does he hang out with guys? Like all those kinds of things. Like when I'm at games on Friday night, a lot of that is like, all right, if Luke throws an interception in the first series, does he come out and pout or does he come out and like rebound? Like those kinds of things are actually more important, because everybody has a quarterback coach. Everybody could throw the route tree. You know what I mean? It's like those kinds of things that I think are most important.
I couldn't agree more with you, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, as I go through my career, this is my 24th season, you know, I wish I could say the parenting is getting better,
right?
But it's not, you know, and I think the parenting is getting way worse. And especially with social media, you know, when I first started coaching in 2001, there was none of this, you know, people weren't posting and sitting there watching it to 100 likes and that made their day, you know, you know, now it's almost like pathetic sometimes what you see out there. So, but yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, all of those things need to be, if I was a college coach, you know, if I ever went to college, I would be calibrating all of those things, and how the kid was brought up and parented would be very high on my list.
Yeah.
You know, I know some guys, I know Coach Pete at Boise back in the day, used to call them OKGs, you know, our kind of guys.
Right.
And I know that went into it, you know, and I think that's very telling, you know, if they've been parented properly, they're hardworking. They're not just in it for 1,000 likes on social media and the NIL money and everything else. Right. You know, they're in it because they genuinely love the game and want to be great and are fierce competitors. Then I think you're going to have a guy that's going to live up to the rating. You know, if not, then they're going to be, you know, the next, you know, whoever, like, whoever. you mentioned Malik Henry, right? So the next, unfortunately, you know, Malik Henry or whatever, you know, you go through the first round of the NFL draft and we go back.
Totally.
You know, and you're talking about quarterbacks and your Leaf and Russell, all these guys, you know, it's like, you know, they don't end up making it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yep. Totally. All right, Chad, I kept you long enough. That is Chad Johnson, the coach at Mission Viejo, California. I'm Adam Gorney. Please stay around for the second part of the Respect My Decision podcast with Greg Smith.
Welcome back into the Respect My Decision podcast. I am Greg Smith, National Recruiting Analyst here at Rivals.com, and it is rankings week, so I'm joined by a very special guest, Adam Friedman, our rankings director and National Transfer Portal Analyst. It's not like I don't do this for a living. Adam, thanks for joining, man. How you doing?
I'm good. That title's a mouthful. We're going to have to fix that, I guess.
Yeah. That's a lot to say. I realized as I was saying it, it's the first time I've actually said it out loud. So that, you know, it's how it goes. It's fine. But it's a huge week for you, man. How are things in general?
Things are busy. Things are exciting. We've got lots of big changes in the Rivals 250. Of course, the season is right around the corner. So, of course, that means transfer portal talk is about to heat up again. And so, yeah, plenty to talk about with 2025. We've got the 2026 rankings update coming out next week. And then, yeah, transfer portal. So let's get into it, man. New number one in the Rivals 250 is right in your area, right in the Midwest. Yeah. Tavian Sinclair out of Ohio, quarterback committed to Ohio State, moves up to number one overall. I mean, that's the biggest news of the cycle so far. Right. I think, and we were all so impressed with him at every event that he went to. He continues to get better. There's still room for improvement, which is awfully impressive, right, given where he's at right now. And he couldn't really be going into a better situation at Ohio State. You know, there's plenty of talented quarterbacks there to learn from, plenty of talented coaches to learn from, and a system that really lends itself to St. Clair's skill set. So yeah, we really like where he's at.
Yeah, I love where he's at. And I think that he is, I wrote a piece or part of a piece for our Ohio State site, Dotting the I's, about kind of talking through his meteoric rise from where he was, I think, unranked not that long ago to now being the number one player in the country. And I kind of told the story of, and I'll see what you think about this. I told the story of, he's a really good example to me of a guy that was a really good prospect. And you heard about him being a good prospect, and then he went out and did a bunch of stuff so that people could see him, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes that gets lost. And I think that sometimes people think that we're just saying, oh yeah, you guys should come out into these camps and you should get, you know, eyeballs on you and show what you got. But this is a real great example of how that process works out for the better for a prospect.
Yeah, we saw him a lot last season on film. I remember we made him a four-star during the season last year because, I mean, he was just putting up monster numbers and he looked great on film. There was a ton of potential. And then I saw some film of him at that Nike event around the Super Bowl. Yep. And that came out right before we did our rankings update in January or February. And I remember thinking we should make him a five-star. And we didn't. We moved him way up, kept him right outside five-star range, and I certainly regretted that afterwards, because then he went on to have an outstanding offseason, and here we are now sitting with him at number one in the country in the Rivals 250. So kudos to him for going out and proving it. I wish everybody would subscribe to that mindset, because it makes our jobs easier. But not only that, it gives these players a better understanding about where they are in their progression. Some of these kids play in against not great competition during the year, and so it's really hard to get an idea about how good they are. And I wish that they would give themselves that frame of reference during the offseason going up against that elite competition.
Yeah, because it definitely helps them to know what they need to get better at as well. But we're on the topic of quarterbacks, so I want to stay there, because we have three quarterbacks in the top five. And Tavian St. Clair, our new number one, Bryce Underwood, Julian Lewis, and then Keelan Russell is rising fast. So I'm going to put you on the spot with a tough question. If you had to pick of all, and I'll add Russell into there as well, if you had to pick between those four guys to start your college program with Adam Friedman and starting an offense, who are you picking and why?
I think I might pick Keelan Russell. Honestly, he's got the athletic traits. He's just as fast as any of these guys. He's just as big. He's got just as big an arm. He's rapidly improving when it comes to mechanics, footwork, all of that. And he's used to playing against elite competition, right? There aren't, Bryce Underwood doesn't play against elite competition. Tavian St. Clair doesn't do that during the season either. Julian Lewis certainly does, but there are physical limitations that worry me slightly. Although I realize he is a year younger than all of these quarterbacks, but Keelan has, I think, the biggest upside. And he's going into a system where he's going to be able to play, I guess, fairly early. There's a lot of similarities between him and Michael Penix. We saw what Coach DeBoer was able to do with him. So I kind of like Keelan Russell out of this group. I wouldn't be totally surprised if he challenged for number one overall after the season and after the All-Star games, given what he's set up to do this season. And so you know, just kind of keep an eye on him. Greg, I would pose the same question to you. Who do you think you would start a team with?
You know, it's funny because this is really hard. I think that you could I don't think that the Russell pick is a bad pick by any means. I think that Bryce Underwood, to me, if you said, man, if you could just like ensure me that his development will continue, he could be the guy. Like, that is a guy that could be a future number one overall pick. When you look at him, the way that he looks, the way that the ball jumps out of his hand, his athletic ability, he may be among the best athletes overall in this class, right? Like, it's hard to go against him. I do think that I would stick with our new number one, Tavian St. Clair. I think that his mixture to me of the skill set of his ability to layer the football, throw with a lot of arm strength as well, but then also his athletic ability is kind of underrated. Like, I don't think that we talk about that maybe enough, about how good of an athlete that he is. So I think he gives you that extra dimension as well. And then I think that off the field, the intangibles are really good with him. I think that he's a kid, and we've seen him at multiple events now where he's just kind of the alpha dog out there. Kids are kind of gravitating towards him. I think that those sorts of things really make me think that he would be the guy that I would most likely bet on of all of those guys. But there really is a strong argument for all four of them, which is why it's going to be a fascinating situation to see how it plays out with how they're kind of ranked when we get to the end of the season.
Yeah, there's really no bad choice here either. No. I definitely want to say that, like, all four of these guys are absolute studs. They're going to play this game for a long time, and I think they're going to have great college careers and then theoretically go on to be first round picks, because that's why they're five stars. That's how the NFL does it, right? Any five star quarterback is a first round pick. So I really do, though. If it wasn't Keelan Russell for me, I'd probably take Bryce Underwood, because they're very similar in that there's so much more room for growth. The physical traits are there. I love what he's going to be able to do at LSU. And I think the ceiling is so sky high on him that it's just hard to say no to a guy like that.
Right. And that's a guy that I want to see in person in a game early in the season, because it'll be fascinating to just kind of see him just against his peers, to kind of see get deeper into his game. But another guy I wanted to talk to you about is Michael Carroll, a guy that we got to see in Jacksonville. Now, he rose 155 spots to number 30 overall. What did you see from him to make him have that kind of a jump? And then what does he need to be able to do to then make that next leap into five star status?
Yeah, you know, Michael Carroll, he's at IMG Academy now, but he was in the Philadelphia area for the entire beginning of his career, right? Mm-hmm. And so I got really familiar with him. I'm based in the Mid-Atlantic and covered Carroll from the very beginning of his recruitment. And seeing him time and time again, it looked like he was an inch taller and 10 pounds heavier every time I saw him. He's up to 6'6 plus, more than 300 pounds, 316 pounds, I think is what we got him at the five star in Jacksonville in June. And 34 inch arms, really good length. He plays guard, though. He has a tackle body. He plays guard. He has that position versatility when he gets to the next level. He's an athletic guy for that size. I really like all of those traits. But my biggest question really was, you know, how strong is he? Can he play with toughness, tenacity, aggressiveness against elite competition? Because he really has not seen players like he saw at five star during the rest of his career. And he really stepped up to the plate there, and he went head to head with Jakeem Stewart, the best player in the 2026 class, who would be a five star if he were in the 2025 class. And, you know, Carroll didn't back down. He held his own. He won multiple reps against Stewart and won plenty of reps during five star. And that answered a lot of those questions for me: that aggressiveness, toughness, strength, playing strength, hand strength, lower body foundation. I think that he really answered a lot of questions, and now he's one of the highest ranked players in the entire class.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that the questions around him were those questions, because me getting my first exposure to him at five star, it's like, whoa, this kid's got, as we say, that dog in him, right? And it was interesting because I would not have thought that that was the question going in. It really stood out to me, not just how he went toe-to-toe with Jakeem Stewart, but how he won reps and then dominated other people as well. And it's not like the other kids were slouches out there either. Those are the best, you know, pass rushers in the country. So to see that, I think it was really impressive. And then I'm really looking forward to seeing now how he continues to develop down at IMG. You know, he's going to face good competition in practice every day. That will help sharpen his skills. And they'll play a national schedule and he'll get to see some really good talented players. I think that he's definitely still a kid to keep an eye on as we move through this cycle.
Yeah, I mean, and that offensive line class that Alabama has put together so far, I mean, really impressive group. Along with Carroll, it's Mal Waltrip, who's a four-star, Jackson Lloyd, a four-star, Micah DeBose, a highly ranked offensive lineman up in the Rivals 250, Ty Haywood just on the outside of five-star range. That's a really, really great group, and I think that Carroll, along with those guys, are going to form a really solid front group for the Alabama Crimson Tide for the next few years.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about Keelan Russell before, and that's they get to then protect him, and that'll be a key part to his development, right, is that he'll have that wall of guys, along with, of course, the skill position guys that they're going to continue to bring in under Kalen DeBoer. So that's good. That one is going to be interesting to see how they continue to develop along the way down there in Tuscaloosa. But one thing I wanted to definitely mention before we get you out of here, Adam, I appreciate it. David Sanders, set to commit here soon. One of the biggest kids out there left, both literally and figuratively, to make his commitment. Seems like it's coming down. Tennessee, Nebraska, Ohio State still in the mix. Georgia still in the mix as well. What's the latest that you're hearing as we kind of get into the final hours of decision time for him?
Yeah, I think the overriding theme right now as we get towards the end of his recruitment, or at least for now, is follow the visits, right? Yep. The last two visits that he did were Nebraska and Tennessee. Ohio State was viewed as the leader, or at least 1A with Tennessee as 1B heading into those visits, mm-hmm. and Nebraska, and then a last trip to Tennessee getting the final word in Knoxville. I think that the Vols probably have the momentum here going into his decision on Saturday. We'll see if that holds all the way through signing day. Things are obviously fluid during the recruiting process. You know, the first commitment is a lot of times when the real recruitment actually starts for these big time guys. So we'll see how things turn out there. But for now, I would think Tennessee has the edge heading into Saturday after talking to a few sources also, and just kind of reading some of the tea leaves there. I know my future cast was early on Georgia. You know, I thought that those guys at that point had an overwhelming lead. That was more than a year ago when I put that in, I believe, or about a year ago, I guess. And, you know, things obviously have slipped for the Bulldogs in the time since then, but I'll be changing my future cast to Tennessee here shortly in advance of his decision on Saturday. And we'll see if that needs to be changed again heading into National Signing Day in December.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's a great point, is that this one is, I think this recruitment is just beginning, and this is not necessarily like any shot at him or anything. It's because of the situation. And this is why this recruitment is fascinating to me, not just because he's such a big time prospect, but because the teams that are battling out here for him, like, desperately need the type of player that he is for a lot of different reasons. Tennessee needs him to kind of complete that group and continue showing that they're going to take the right steps within the SEC with the way that their class is going. And it's a very good class that they've got going, right? Nebraska needs to be able to take that next step as a program. Matt Rhule has proven at other places, but he's going to need elite talent, especially along that offensive line, to protect his future, his former five-star quarterback and Dylan Raiola. Ohio State has been able to recruit basically everyone that they want at every position except for offensive line. Their offensive line coach Justin Fry is coming under fire because they continue to miss on these offensive linemen, so they're going to have to stay in the fight too. Like, it's just a fascinating, I think, subplots going on with this whole recruitment that is going to keep it interesting, I think, all the way through signing day.
It really is. Yeah, like you mentioned, all of these teams need a standout offensive tackle, mm-hmm. like David Sanders, a guy who's almost a plug and play at left tackle. He's got those traits that teams are looking for in franchise left tackles: quickness, aggressiveness, length, physical traits, smarts, right? He understands pass rushing or pass blocking techniques. He understands the offensive line schemes out there. And, you know, he's been a big relationships guy throughout the process. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that he told me, his mother told me, and a number of people around his recruitment told me during this process, is that he's not just going to go to the school that offers him the biggest NIL package, right? This mm-hmm. is a kid who's looking for development. He wants to be ready for the NFL in 3 to 4 years. And it's not about that, the upfront NIL package. He wants to make sure that he gets to the NFL, is a first round pick, and is set up for a long career at the highest level of the game. And it looks like all of these programs that he's considering here have a chance to really set him up in that way. So we'll see how things turn out on Saturday. And then as we head towards National Signing Day in December.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have our eyes out on all of your coverage of the David Sanders recruitment. And that's going to do it for us this time on the Respect My Decision podcast. For Adam Friedman, I am Greg Smith. We'll catch you guys later.